We have been kind of monitoring what's been going on throughout northern Minnesota when it comes to the SAP run. We've talked to folks like David Manuel and Bob Schimmick and Murray Gilman and other folks about how it has been so far out there in the with the maple trees. And joining us now is our friend from Brainerd, Kent Montgomery. Good morning, Kent. Thanks for being here.
Morning, Heidi and John. Morning. How are you guys today?
We're good.
Good.
So is the SAP done running right now where you are?
Well, for us it is. Yeah, it's been a bit of a roller coaster here recently, as it has been for everyone. You know, you go from 60 some degrees one day to freezing conditions the next day, which makes it a little challenging for syrup and SAP. We find days in the 40s, nights in the 20s, which you probably heard from other producers, are pretty much ideal. And it's been kind of bouncing all around. And when we get to the end of the season, a couple things begin to happen as well. The SAP will continue to flow many times. But with the warmer temperatures, when you have a kind of a liquid out there with sugar in it, out in the open and warm temperatures, it's just like anything else. It starts to get bacteria or other things growing in there. And we use the term cloudy. I don't know if that's what other folks use, but it becomes kind of cloudy and opaque with that growth in there, which provides some off flavors if you were to cook that. And we usually quit when we see that. We'd rather have quality rather than quantity. And the other thing that tends to happen out there is, like everything in the spring, every Tuesday you hear the reports from John and the students of phenology and what's happening. And as that sap begins to flow, the buds begin to develop. And it begins to use that sugar as that tree begins to wake up and reassume some of its processes that it was doing before it shut down over the winter. And that can impart some off tastes as well as other things begin moving around in that sap flow as well. So another good reason for kind of closing it down at this point.
Overall, Kent, has it been a really good year?
It's been a fair year, John.
Okay.
It's, you know, the more we do this and the more we look for patterns, the less we see. Every year is its own year in terms of when it starts, how vigorous or how well it flows, whether it's interrupted. You know, years we'll be going through over our knees in snow, and other years it'll be balmy out there. But this year we ended up with about 20 finished gallons, which isn't our greatest year, but by far isn't our worst year either.
About how many trees do you tap?
Well, we're kind of a small to maybe a little bit bigger than a small operation. We can tap up to about 400. Usually it comes down to how much energy do I have to stay awake at night and boil it down is more than anything. So it's not so much how many trees, it's how much stamina do I have. And that's usually the bottleneck in all of these operations, is you can collect a lot of sap, but getting sap converted or into syrup is the time-consuming process. And there are ways with reverse osmosis and things that kind of nibble along the edge and increase efficiencies, but it comes down to time, which, quite honestly, I'm glad we haven't figured out a way to make that instantaneous, because what it does for us is we'll go out and collect, and then everyone comes in to warm up, and we're boiling the syrup, and we have to sit and wait. And that forces us to sit around and talk and have time together around a boiling fire that, if it was instantaneous, we'd be off to do other things and wouldn't have that time for family and friends to sit and reconnect every year.
Wow. You're painting.
Do you play music as you sit around?
Usually, I'm too busy. I have friends who come over and play music and ask if they can help. And it's like, yeah, no, just keep playing. You're fine.
You're painting a beautiful picture. You're painting a beautiful picture. I wonder why Norman Rockwell didn't do that.
I don't know, John. Maybe he just never experienced.
That's right.
Maybe it was the last one on his list he never got to.
Hey, I get this. I ask this question all the time to people that get the sap. How much sap does it take to make 25 gallons? Or let's just simply say a gallon.
Okay, so we picked up You know, there's a lot of variables. First of all, sugar content can vary, and not significantly. You know, it's only a few percentage points. But a percentage point could be the difference of having to boil off 5 to 10 more gallons. It really adds up, even though it sounds like a small amount. And so we collected, I think this year, we picked up about a little over 800 gallons out of the woods, which that isn't a tremendous amount. We ended up with 20. We had about 100 that we got rid of that had spoiled. It got a little cloudy, and we didn't want to cook it down, so we got rid of that. And then when it's all said and done, you end up with some in the evaporator that's not quite completely gone to syrup. It's not at the right content. It's partially there. So there's always that, and we've tried to collect that and use it for brewing beer and all kinds of other things, and to regain that. But it usually runs about 30, 35 gallons of sap per gallon of syrup is kind of the rough number. But again, it can be variable in terms of sugar content and your equipment and wow. and how you handle your material. The other thing we figured out is it's also about a six pack of beer to every gallon of syrup as we sit there and relax around the fire.
We're talking to Kent Montgomery from the Brainerd area about how this sap season has been. You described kind of this gathering as you boil down the sap to make syrup. What is your sugar shack like?
Well, it's evolved. It started out, when I was a kid in high school, when I first started doing this, it was a cast iron pot over a fire out in the middle of the woods. And then when we moved to our new property back in the early 2000s, we moved it into a woodshed that was open-sided and had a barrel stove. And we've since kind of built a little sugar shack, and now we're in a bigger barn. So it's evolved. I think as I gotten older, I've either gotten smarter or I can't stand the elements quite as much. So I had to get in to something nice and warm where we could enjoy ourselves a little more. So it's kind of a nice indoor facility right now that we're working out of. You know, it's real interesting too, Heidi. I've got friends working at Central Lakes College. We have a real strong influence and connection with Native communities, especially Mille Lacs Band, and some of the friends over there I've talked to. These things that I just shared about the time. That's the same thing that they have shared with me. They really appreciate that time to reconnect with family. So this is something that transcends. It isn't just us. This transcends cultures. It transcends age groups, regions of the country or whatever. It's one of the great outcomes. I mean, we really enjoy making the syrup. We start when it's winter, we finish and the birds are back, the cranes are calling, and spring has returned. So it's a great transition. But for us, and I think most other people who do this, it's equally as much to reconnect with people. And I think we didn't do it last year with COVID. And so I think with the opportunity to do this year and to be able to get together and spend time with people that we can actually see and talk to and interact with, it was especially rewarding to have that experience.
Okay, so you're sitting down now, you've collected 800 gallons, you got 20 gallons of syrup, and you're having breakfast, and you know how much work you've poured into that. I wonder how much syrup you put on your pancakes than I do, because I didn't do the work. I kind of slosh it on. Are you like very conservative in the syrup?
Yeah, John, it's funny when you start, you know, if you haven't done syrup before, you go to a grocery store and you look at the natural syrup out there and you go, how much are they charging for that? And then once you make it, you go into the store and look at that and you say, how much are they charging for that? It's first of all, you can't believe how much they charge because it's so high. And once you make it, it's like, man, that's cheap. I'm very conservative and I'd rather add a little more and get it mopped up with all of it mopped up with the pancakes or the waffles rather than leave any on the plate. And I can remember a Boundary Waters trip we went on and brought some syrup with for our first breakfast and stuff. And there was some left over. my friend gave most of it to his dog.
Oh.
And I almost died internally when I saw that happen. It's not that the dog didn't deserve some syrup, but it's like, oh man, that's a lot of syrup to give that dog. That's a lot of work going there.
So do you sell it or do you Christmas present it or what do you do?
We kind of do all of the above. We, I think like a lot of producers, we're more wrapped up into the production than really thinking about the marketing and the cost and everything. And we could do that a lot better, but we do market some. And we do give a lot away too, which is really nice. Like anything else, I'm sure you and Heidi have something that you either make or create or do yourself, collect berries or make something that, you know, you get that internal reward when you give something to someone else that's part of you that you've invested your time into. And it's just, it seems much more meaningful to give it. And I think in many cases, people really appreciate those things when they get them, when it's a part of you as well as whatever it is, syrup or a painting or whatever it might be.
You have a name for it. I was lucky enough to get some. I think you gifted some to my mother and she passed it to me. But you have a name for your syrup that has a tie to your family, right?
Yeah, yeah. We call it Sievert's Woods. And Sievert was my great-grandfather who came over from Norway at about 17 and eventually settled the area here. So our kids are fifth generation out on the property here. Which to me is kind of amazing. You know, I think about when I had 17-year-olds and I wanted to know where they were going that night and what time they were going to be back at the house, much less jumping on a ship and going to a different continent. But, you know, different times, I guess. And he came over here and settled it. So, yeah, we've done that to kind of pay a little homage to, you know, his work, his sacrifice and the ability to be on the property that he had. You know, it's rewarding to go out and do these things, or we manage the forest here for sustainable wood products and other things, and to just be able to walk the forest and think really the only thing that's separating you is just some time is really a unique experience. Even though you go to some sites that are beautiful and have amazing ecosystems, you don't have that sense of personal history. And that's a real, real valuable thing we hold on to tightly here.
That's Kent Montgomery from the Brainerd area. We sure appreciate your time today. It was good to talk to you, Kent.
You too. Good hearing from both of you. Stay well. We look forward to when we can all be together soon here.
There you go.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.